For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as in a cave. We invite you now to join us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle, Timothy O'Donnell, and Joseph Tomasian. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford, and we are going to continue today our discussion on metaphysics. We've been talking the last several weeks about metaphysics, and metaphysics really is that study of those, I would say, those ideas, those concepts that are necessary for the possibility of us recognizing reality. So they're the sort of the hidden things, those things that are under, you know, things like beauty, like truth, being.
Yeah, the transcendentals.
Transcendentals, all of those things that you kind of honestly take for granted as the preconditions for the possibility even of knowing things or talking about things or discussing things.
Yep, I think that's right. And we need to get our metaphysics in order. This is episode 5. So each episode standalone, but it is helpful to trace the trajectory that we've been kind of working chronologically.
Yeah, we're working. And I think part of it is you know, trying to look at this from the lens of a Catholic intellectual. In other words, what effect do these various metaphysical systems have on our understandings of the Eucharist? How do they affect our understandings of our interaction with God, our knowledge of God? How can we have faith? All of those questions that I think tie into how do we ultimately view reality? So, one of the more prevalent metaphysical positions, you know, we talked last week about modernism, and what I think the great modernist as far as metaphysics goes is Immanuel Kant. So we talked about Kant's metaphysical system. But there was a huge reaction to Kant, right? So, you know, Kant's claim was that all of these metaphysical categories are categories of our reason. They're built into the framework of our brains. So our brains are wired to basically know reality as we encounter it. That's kind of his claim.
That's the Copernican turn, or
right,
something
exactly,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus our minds reaching out to objects.
Yeah, we can't.
Objects come into us, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the we reach out to the object, but the fact of the matter is we don't really know if contained within the object there are these categories that our brain uses to understand the world around us. So,
right.
But there's obviously a lot of controversy around that stand, not only from a scholastic Thomistic viewpoint, but I think the claim that we can even know reality with any sort of certainty, that claim in itself draws a lot of question these days from a camp that call themselves postmodernists. So we're going to take a little bit look at, I guess, what you could call the negative skeptical metaphysical position of postmodernism.
Yeah, so postmodernism, there's a long list of features to postmodernism. It's a way of like other, you know, systems, philosophical systems. It's a way of making sense of the world in which we live. So it has with it, I would say, you know, commitments or suppositions, whether explicitly we're adhering to them or rejecting them or holding them, they're built into it because it assumes it's going to have to, we all have to have certain assumptions about basic things on how, for example, you talk about the way things are in reality. And following Kant, postmodernism, I think really does unleash a kind of skepticism. And that's maybe one of its dominant features in the postmodernist is that there's a high degree of skepticism, especially about our ability to know and comprehend the outside world.
Right. And I think the first
world outside our minds.
Yeah. I think the first sort of insight that the postmodern thinkers came to was recognizing that whenever we talk about reality, we're actually talking about it. In other words, all of our understanding of the universe, etc., is ultimately filtered through language. And they come at it from a very linguistic standpoint that you can't think unless you think in words. And that
seems true.
Yeah, and that's sort of their baseline, that when we think, we're not thinking about objects. We're thinking about words. We're thinking about symbols. We're thinking about representations of reality, but we're not thinking about reality in and of itself. All of our thought is filtered ultimately through language, and language itself has a tendency to change. It has a tendency to, mm-hmm. to change over the course of time. Obviously, we all speak different languages. So those filters tend to filter our experience of reality. And I think that's kind of, to understand postmodernism, you have to understand that thought is not about objects. Thought is about words.
Well, I think what that may lead to, that makes me think of like Friedrich Nietzsche, actually, when you describe it that way. It makes me think, though, of one of the other, the skepticism that's prominent in postmodernism occurs, I think, it rests upon this commitment that or understanding that that reality really doesn't have there aren't really objective exterior say moral norms or reality that I can my intellect comes, everything becomes subjective because everything comes down to and this is where Kant places things, like Kant places us, removes us from direct contact with reality. We only have contact with the sort of the reality as it's formed through the categories in our minds. And in your case, I think you're pointing out that there's this linguistic component to it. Like you can't think, like try to think without using words. You can't. We think in, so we're making use of those. So that kind of makes everything turns inward and makes things subjective. And if everything's subjective, well, that, to me, feeds into, you know, what's true for me isn't necessarily true for you. That's where I think it goes.
Sometimes postmodernism goes that way, but it doesn't always go that way. I think the skepticism towards a idea of quote-unquote objective fact, it creates objectivity into a null category. In other words, it doesn't say there's no objectivity. It just says objectivity is impossible. And so, and there's a distinction there. When you say objectivity is impossible, you're not saying that there's no apparent objectivity. You're just kind of saying it's apparent. And with that,
well, that I you think, don't have access to it.
Well, but
if it's impossible, right?
But it's of a different nature, I guess, is sort of, it's not what we think it is, but it doesn't mean that it's not there, but it's not what we think it is. Objectivity is part of the human culture. Objectivity is part of human history. It's part of our inheritance. It's part of the things that have accumulated over time. All of these are ways that a postmodernist would describe it. That doesn't make it any more, I guess, solid and in effect all the time and, you know, therefore up to us to obey. As a matter of fact, I think postmodernists, a lot of them, find what people consider objective facts to be more stubborn than people that kind of recognize the existence of objectivity. If that sort of sounds strange and circular, a lot of postmodern thought kind of comes off that way. But no, I
don't know about that. I mean, I would say it comes across more as ideological. And ideology has with it the disadvantage of commitments that can be untethered from truth.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, you run into some postmodern thinkers that lean in that direction. That, well, because objectivity is not something that's possible, therefore anything that even smacks of objectivity is really changeable and fungible and can move about and it's hard. But I think a lot of the postmodernists look at objectivity as just as in force, just as much there, but it's kind of like, well, in all reality, though, this is water that we're swimming in. You know, the fish don't notice it. They don't see it. You know, you bring up water to a fish, and a fish is like, "What? What's that?" But nonetheless, the water's there. But that doesn't mean that fish can live outside of water just because they recognize that they're living in water, right? And I think the objectivity subjectivity question that comes up in postmodern thought oftentimes is that way. Yeah, we recognize that what we seem to think is part of the objective universe really isn't. It's part of our language and our structures and the way we talk about it, but that doesn't mean it's any less real, any less concrete, any less there, any more changeable than what it was when we thought it was objectively real.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I'd have to give that some thought. I would say postmodernism has, it's not a formal rejection of objective reality, of realism. It favors, at least, it either sets it aside.
Well, it's a radical. Postmodernism is grounded in a radical skepticism of kind of objective reality. It starts from the standpoint of what we know are pretty much symbols of reality, not really reality itself, just the symbols of it. And from that insight, then the question is, okay, how sturdy and durable are these symbols really? And that's where you wind up with, I think, a wide variety of opinions from one postmodernist to another.
Yeah, I think that's where I would go is, along those lines, I would posit that a feature of postmodernism is that one observes that there's a lot of change and variance from person to person and organization to organization over place and time. That feeds into this radical skepticism, and that leads one to believe that objective, again, I'll go to morality. That's a really easy, I think that's an easy one for Catholics to get our minds around in terms of how we might disagree with postmodernists or postmodernist thinking, is that because I see all this variance in the world, all this disagreement, and different ways of things that are sort of instances of things, then I have to conclude then that things are really subjective, that things are really, because of the great variance, there's no really good way to point to one system that accounts for it all. And I think that's the postmodernists, is that, and that's why they back themselves into ideological commitments, because ideology doesn't have the problem, as I was mentioning before, doesn't have the problem of saying, hey, well, ideologies can have contradictions. For an objective realist, that those contradictions are real problems that one would not commit to.
Well, we're coming up on a break, and we'll be right back here on the Catholic Cave to continue our discussion of postmodernism and metaphysics. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
It's strengthening you in your faith with God.
It fills my mind and my heart with truth.
Touched my heart, and it's just so heartwarming. And with all the things going on in the world right now, it's nice to have heartwarming and have hope.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford, and we are we're continuing our discussion of metaphysics. We're talking a little bit about postmodernism, and we were talking about postmodernism being a recognition that our understanding of reality is ultimately filtered through the, I guess, symbolic content of language that that comes about in our brains. I think that's kind of the and that leads to a wide variety of different thinkers when it comes to when it comes to postmodernism. What does it mean that language is reality? The reality is just simply linguistic, and I think that's kind of the bottom line question, then you get into existentialists where, you know, they focus on that isolation, I think, that, okay, so if my understanding of the world is filtered through language, my language is idiosyncratic, right? I mean, I grew up in my own family. I grew up with my own, I mean, a lot of times you have your own words for things that other people don't understand. So language can be very self-isolating. And so I think the existentialists, you know, look at that as that. They're part of the whole postmodern movement with that. Others look, I think, at sort of the symbolic content and try to unpack and look at the various symbols. I'm thinking of somebody like L.S. Ayers. Not L.S. Ayers.
That's the old that's the old department store. Next you'll bring up Lazarus.
Yeah.
And you don't mean from the Bible.
Right, exactly. No, Ayers. So not the department stores. But I think the looking at the symbolic idea, the idea that language is symbols, but durable symbols, right?
I think they're power to the postmodernists.
Yeah.
I think language is a kind of power. And there I would point to like Foucault.
Yeah. Then there's Foucault, right? Exactly. The Foucault concentrates on the control that certain aspects of society have over the language, right? Whether it's media, you know, he I think very famously looked at the prison system and how the manipulations of symbols of power within the prison system were used to control the populations. And then, you know, he doesn't draw the conclusions, but the obvious conclusions are, you know, the rest of society has done this as well. So there's sort of a recognition that language, because that's how we're filtering reality, that those that are in control of language on a society basis, they're the ones that are in control of society. So there's sort of a power element. And then there are those that I think stem more from Nietzsche and kind of look at it that when there's disagreement, because if everything boils down to the language we use to describe things, we're always going to be at a perpetual impasse. And so because of that, you know, disagreements, intellectual disagreements, ideological, you know, when people come to loggerheads over ideology, it's just a matter of whoever has the most power is who is going to prevail. So there's that element to it too, that it becomes political, I guess. Where a Foucault is looking,
well, that's where you would settle it ultimately,
right? Exactly. Sphere. Where a Foucault is kind of looking at the control of the language. I think there are others that look at the control of the power, and you know, kind of look at it. So there's a wide diversity within postmodernism, but not all of them come to the conclusion that reality itself is somehow completely up to us to understand, or based on our own understanding, or somehow manipulatable or changeable within the realm of our own particular opinions. There's some solidity, I think, to some of the thinkers that say, no, reality is reality. It's there, but that reality is formed as part of the human intellectual project. So I often find Karl Popper to be helpful in this. The Popper talks about sort of three categories of being. You know, the one is the physical world, but then there's the man-made world of man-made objects. And those are, you know, those are changeable. What an automobile looked like 100 years ago is not what an automobile looks like today. And that's all based on our decisions, human decisions of how we want to make automobiles.
Yeah, it's like an efficient cause.
Right.
Yeah.
Science is in that realm. You know, science is very much, it's our discoveries of nature, right? So science isn't nature itself, but it's our discoveries of nature. It's our
Does he include manipulation of it though?
Not necessarily. Well, technology, yes. I mean, technology is certainly part of that whole second
science
realm.
Science does seem to, it certainly has discovery, but it also has an innovation. That's the other thing. So innovation would be a kind of bending of nature.
But then there's the intellectual world too. The world of the things of the mind, as Descartes would say.
Yeah, concepts.
Yeah, exactly. And so ideas and concepts and all of that is sort of a third realm of reality. And so, you know, I think the interplay between them is kind of where postmodernism sort of plays and says it's language that describes all of these things. And because of that, it's all filtered through language, but that doesn't necessarily mean that all three of those realms are completely changeable, completely manipulatable, completely up to just sort of the human mind as to what it actually is.
I wouldn't say they're necessarily, you're right. I don't think I would see the postmodern as saying everything is up for grabs. But I do think ultimately, though, the authority to determine what's changeable or how changeable things are is subjective. It is the individual who determines it. Like, there's not an outside authority that one would appeal to. Like, it's up to each person to arrive at whatever, say, fixed versus changeable things that are changeable. That's where I think the postmodernist lands.
I don't know. Like I said, I go back to Popper. I go back to other people that kind of came off of Popper, and the scientific authority is the truth. I mean, when you're talking about science, that is established by scientists.
But there's wide disagreement across
scientists.
So which authority would they appeal to?
Right. For them, I think, well, it depends on who you're talking about, but I think the authority of those scientists that have discussed these things and come to mutual understanding, you know, when the problems are solved, that's when science has kind of quote unquote.
That's
spoken.
A pretty small field, though, I would think, where the problem's solved. I mean, look, just came through a pandemic, and there's all kinds of scientific disagreement.
There's all kind of there's disagreements of opinion, but I think there are certain well-established facts revolving around the virus, that it's a virus, that a virus is a certain, has a certain characteristic, and that those viruses are communicable, etc.
No, there were, I don't think so at
sure.
all.
Sure, you saw pictures of the virus, right? And I don't think anybody disputed what the virus looked like.
Well, that part, okay, I'll grant you that small part. But there was not widespread agreement.
That's a pretty big part. I mean, what the virus looks like, I don't think anybody really disagreed that it made people sick.
Oh, it did with children, right? That was the big disagreement.
Sure.
That resulted in the closing of schools.
Right.
That we can look back on. And when they really, it seems like children were not at really risk.
Correct.
And
correct.
So there was, the consensus, the scientific consensus to close them.
But I think
that's a counterexample to your statement.
No, it's not a counterexample. It's part of the process of how science works. And so,
that's what I'm saying is that it, but you said it was settled.
No.
It appealed to settled authority. And I'm saying here's an example where there are.
Sure.
There is no settled authority on it.
Right, right. Science itself has aspects that are still being explored, still being looked at.
Problem is science isn't a one thing. It's human beings with certain levels of expertise.
Correct. Correct.
And so therefore appealing to that as authority, I think, is precarious. And so that was why I was using that as a counterexample to the statement that you made. And that's why I would say postmodernists don't locate it in some sort of objective authority.
But that's why I'm bringing up science, because there's a lot of postmodernists that's exactly what they've looked at. They've looked at the authority of science, and what they basically come down to is, no, science works and science helps us to explore the universe because it's this dialogue back and forth that ultimately comes to consensus, and over time that consensus becomes solidified. That's how science works. And so that's a postmodern view of science. You know, a non-postmodern view of science would say, well, there's objective facts in the universe and we may or may not know them, but that has nothing to do with our explorations of them. And postmodernism says, no, science itself is the body of knowledge that we learn from the universe. That's science. And there's disagreements, there's discussion back and forth, but there's a lot of agreement, wide variety of agreement of what is actually true about the universe based on that exploration. That's a postmodern view of science.
Yeah, I don't see it that way. I would give you one example. I don't think that's necessarily the case. So, you know, Sir Isaac Newton, you know, brilliant. His account of nature dominated for centuries, but then it was kind of overturned at the beginning of the 20th century.
Correct.
So where's the settled? So I don't see that as like a settled authority that one would, as a quote unquote science that you would appeal to if it's changing like that.
But it's not okay when you say it's overturned. It wasn't. Right. It's not like it was completely overturned. Paradigm shifts. You know, the paradigms within which we bugged. That's the type of postmodern look. So, the Newtonian paradigm was shown to not be accurate. So but the people that decided that, they're the authorities. It wasn't like you or I just decided, well, Newtonian paradigm doesn't work. No, there were actual scientists and actual scientific work that went into looking at various aspects to decide that. That's where the authority lies.
Yeah, well, I think that sort of goes to what I was thinking, though. But that to me shows that the appealing to a quote unquote scientific authority is precarious. I think the postmodernist probably doesn't really engage in it that much. I think instead they're more interested in they may temporarily hang on to something like that as skeptics, but I think it points to postmodernism. I think points to we're not going to find something external to the self as like a compelling commitment to the truth that my mind would correspond to objective reality as such that it forms my philosophical system. I just don't think we're going to find that in postmodernism. But with that, we got to take a break.
All right.
So when we come back, we'll bring that up or move the conversation forward.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Catholic Cave. I'm Tim O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle, Kent Blandford, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
The first radio station signed on back in the 1930s. And wow, people could get news without having to wait for the next day's newspaper and hear great entertainment right in their living rooms. But then in the late 40s, television came along. And since it could add visual content, well, that would probably kill off radio. But it didn't. In the 70s, satellite radio, 8-track tapes and cassettes, and the Walkman came along. Surely one of these would kill off radio. But they didn't. Now there's streaming on computers, podcasts, Alexa, and smartphones that put the world at your fingertips. And you know what? Radio is still here. In fact, a recent survey of people aged 18 and up showed that on a monthly basis, radio reached more people than television, including time-shifted TV. And for audio programming, more people than smartphones, PC, Alexa, or tablets. When you support Catholic Radio Indy, you're supporting a powerful tool that has the potential to reach over 1 million people every day with the message of salvation. If you're one of our donors, thank you very much. If you haven't joined our family of donors yet, today would be a good day to do that. Just go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and click on the donate button. That's CatholicRadioIndy.org. And thank you for your support.
Catholic Radio Indy has a new look. It's our website. Yes, we have a new website that makes everything about Catholic Radio Indy easier. It's clean, straightforward, and simple to use. You can listen to us live, see our schedule, and our map. You can even silence your phone and take it right into Mass to follow the daily readings. And don't forget, you can get all of our programming through the podcast tab. This makes everything so much easier. So just go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and check us out.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blandford, and we're in the midst of talking about, I guess, where the solidity lies within postmodern thought. So this is an extended discussion that we've had on metaphysics. And you know,
can see how difficult it can be.
Right, because postmodernism is ultimately the standard. I mean, I guess the standard line would be there. We can know nothing as far as any sort of metaphysical concepts. The metaphysical concepts are linguistic devices at best to help describe the reality out there. The question comes into what does objectivity and subjectivity really mean when we're talking about reality, etc. Does that, if something is subjective, does that ultimately mean it's up to the mind of the observer? I'm saying not necessarily. And there's a large amount of postmodernists that would say, no, not necessarily. We live in the world we live in. The world we're given is where we live, and we can't change it just because we think differently about it. But our understanding of it comes about through the filter of language and thought and how not only we, but other people around us think about the world. That doesn't make it any less, I guess, less solid and less unchangeable than if we kind of said, no, that sort of quote unquote objective outside of me reality.
Well, I kind of was thinking too that I'm wondering about this. What are your thoughts on this? I think I have an opinion. Maybe not a really informed opinion though. You think like postmodernism at least implicitly implies atheism?
No, not at all. I think there's very solid Catholic, good Christian postmodernists. Like I said, postmodernism means that skepticism towards metaphysical realities being something more than just linguistic devices. That doesn't mean that they are skeptical of revealed religion. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily, obviously there are atheist postmodernists. I mean, Sartre, existentialism.
I'd say a lot of them.
But Soren Kierkegaard, right? He was an existentialist. He was a Christian.
Think he was a postmodernist though?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. Maybe not postmodernist, but he certainly wasn't modernist. And he was reacting against modernism. So those early existentialists, they're maybe transitional figures. You could look at it, but they're coming.
Well, Kierkegaard seems to be a very committed Christian,
right?
Unlike some others that we've talked about.
Exactly. I think you wind up with this sort of transition into more literary characters as far as thinkers go, rather than just academic philosophers. Mm. So you can start to consider people like Dostoevsky, Goethe. These people are thinkers, they're intellectuals, they're postmodernists. I definitely would throw them in the postmodernist camp.
Dostoevsky,
definitely.
Okay, yep. Yep. I don't know about that.
Yeah, but
we might disagree on that one.
Yeah,
I'm not that familiar with Goethe, actually. So yeah, I'll stay silent on him.
You know, a lot of these authors, they exhibit that characteristic understanding of the world as being linguistic, as being filtered through language and our understanding. And I mean, if you look at Russian literature and you want to contrast like Tolstoy with Dostoevsky, I think that linguistic filter is one of the big differences between the two. But nonetheless, so I bring up Dostoevsky just as somebody that exhibits postmodern thought, whether you want to consider him a postmodernist or not, who's a committed Christian. So you definitely can. Now, how you understand reality, how you understand the faith, how you understand how that impacts the world, it's going to be a little bit different for somebody that's coming at it from a postmodern perspective.
Yeah, I think postmodernism, to have that view, I think would create a lot of tension, especially for Catholics, because we have good reasons not to be very skeptical, because we have access to divine revelation and sacred tradition and the magisterium.
But how are those things conveyed to us, Tim?
Well, there I'm going to differ with, say, Kant and the postmodernists. I don't believe...
Well, Kant's not a postmodernist. It's the reaction against people like Kant that you get postmodernism.
Well, I would say postmodern maybe builds off of it. I think Kant is kind of... His metaphysics and his epistemology, I think, are kind of preludes to... Because I think it's a move inward. I think that's the... That's the big difference, is that I think postmodernism move inward.
And modernism isn't?
No, I think modernism is as well. That's why I think it's called... So there's a deep connection between those two things. I think postmodernism is a kind of radical extension of modernism.
See, I see postmodernism as a rejection of modernism, as a radical.
In what ways?
Well, you know, modernism basically says we can understand the world through our reason, through intellect, through whether it's Descartes or whether it's Kant, we can come to certain knowledge, right? That's the whole idea. That was the focus of what Kant was trying to do. That's what Descartes claimed to have found. That's what Hume was ultimately very skeptical about as an empiricist. But he said we can come to solid understanding, right, of the world through empirical facts.
Yeah.
So for them, it was where can you find certainty, right? That was the central question. How and where can mankind find certainty? And what Kant was dealing with metaphysics is what are the preconditions that we have for certainty? Right. So how is it that we can know things for certain? And that's what Kant was
trying
at.
To do.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he was doing at.
I'll agree. Postmodern rejects kind of that high level of reason.
And postmodern.
But do you think they still hang on to empiricism, though?
No, I don't. No, because they reject any idea of certainty. So,
well, what was the talk about science then? Following science.
Well, because it's not like science doesn't exist. Just because you can't be certain about things. You know, I think that that's the ultimate rub is what we claim to know in science is still filtered through narratives, still filtered through paradigms, still filtered through models, right? The whole idea that science is a model of nature, that's a very postmodern idea. I don't think anybody prior to postmodernists would see, well, science is the model and nature is something different. I don't think they would see that. So, you know, that's a postmodern thought that we're dealing with models and the model changes over time, right? That doesn't make the model any less accurate or any less true, but it does change. And so, that type of postmodern thought is anchored, I think, to a certain extent in reality. Whereas, yeah, you're right. You wind up with, well, okay, if it's all narratives, then the narratives are up to the individuals and I can make up my own science. You've got some postmodern thinkers that would move in that direction. But you know, I think when it comes to science, this idea of we've got solid, accurate models, I think that's pretty much the view that prevails.
Yeah, I suppose that we didn't do a good job either talking about like what disciplines qualify as science. I think I tend to gravitate towards physics, but it's, you know, science, people might put all kinds of subjects under science.
Right. But even
like
physics,
psychology.
But even physics has its models and paradigms that change over time.
But like sociology, is that a science?
Well, you know, I guess we could debate that, but, you know,
probably, I'm not so sure.
I'm not so one sure.
Way,
either.
One way
yeah,
or the other.
No, my personal views are no, it's not scientific because you're dealing with opinions rather than objective facts, so to speak. So, but anyway, back to postmodernism.
Right.
and how does a Christian? What is a workable, durable, non-heretical view of Christianity look like from postmodernism? Well, what we're dealing with is the story of God. And the story of Revelation and how God has revealed himself to mankind, comes to us linguistically. It comes to us as a narrative. It comes to us through people. It comes to us through the people that God works with. Mm-hmm. The building of a Christian people, that's also very much a sociological project, right? It's not based on, things that you could call would be necessarily objective reality, but it's based on people. It's based on how God interacts with human beings, and God interacts through human beings through language and through stories and through narratives. And that is the content of the faith. So to try
well,
to
there's,
divorce...
There's direct encounter, though.
Well, yeah, but that direct encounter is, once again, through language.
I would agree that there's no getting around language, right? Because we have to think in language. But I think the difference might be, I don't know. Think about when our Lord walked the earth. I don't know that would be that postmodernism, you know, captures that kind of encounter.
Oh, it can. It certainly can. I mean, there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of discussion of what that encounter brings about in culture, right? And how that permeates within culture, how that filters through the culture. That's all very much part of that whole postmodern discussion.
I'll have to chew on that one a little bit.
Yeah, postmodern. See, I think where we're at an impasse is you automatically think postmodernism means skepticism, and I don't think that's true. I think there's a lot of postmodern thinkers that are not that skeptical, but they're also recognizing that their solid knowledge, what they know, etc., is based not on objective reality, so to speak, but on language.
Yeah, that's probably where we do differ, because I'll certainly grant that language is integral to the human person. I just don't know that the postmodern system relies as heavily on that as other features that I think it may have,
right?
And, that create problems.
I think maybe something to be helpful is to go back to St. Thomas Aquinas a little bit. And so St. Thomas Aquinas starts off talking about the need for a science of divinity, right? A need for theology as a science distinct from philosophy, right? The postmodern understanding, we were just talking about the postmodern understanding of science being a model, right? A linguistic sort of artifact that's created by human beings to be able to understand nature. If you take that same idea that theology is a linguistic understanding, a model that are created by human beings to be able to understand God, that's a very postmodern idea. Once again, that's not a pre-modern or modern understanding of science. That's a postmodern understanding of science, but it can equally apply to theology today and not be seen as something threatening, wrong, subjective, or heretical.
Mm. Well, I might say it does, but we'll have to do that after the break. So you're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
A deadline, great expectations, daily pressure, occasional failure. When God is with you, feel free to say, bring it on. Catholic Radio Indy.
An interview with Father Trenton Rauch and his story on how Catholic radio influenced his vocation.
I was not struck by lightning and knocked off my horse. I had a lot of time driving in the car listening to the radio, and I just gotten to a point where I would prefer to listen to something that would be intellectually stimulating. And at the same time, I was learning about the faith, particularly the apologetics.
Catholic radio, building faith, building vocations.
Welcome back one last time to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle.
Here at least for this program.
I know.
And unless we get a call from the bishop, which could always happen.
Well, and not only that, but we're in our last segment. And, you know, all of these metaphysical shows, all of these shows on metaphysics, we get to this last segment and there's a little bit of panic because it's like, how are we going to end this discussion? Because metaphysics is sort of an unending discussion, right? I mean, you keep going, but as we're talking about postmodernism, and since this is the Catholic Cave, you know, talking about sort of those Catholic aspects of postmodern thought, is probably worthwhile. So, you know, how does postmodernism deal with revelation? I think that's kind of one of the big questions. We touched on that a little bit, that, you know, revelation is ultimately given to us by God. It's given to us through language and culture. And so understanding the culture from which revelation came becomes incredibly important. And so I think there's a lot of biblical scholarship to get back to a authentic understanding of the culture from 1 AD that comes about. It came about in modernism, definitely. I mean, modernism, there was a big movement to get back to the sources, etc. But to truly understand the culture and to recognize that there's a cultural relevance to a certain extent to what's written in the Bible, that's a very postmodern view. And that the narratives that were given to people in former times when Revelation, that those narratives have changed over time, and kind of seeing how that's changed. That's also a very postmodern view. And then the question, I think, for a committed Catholic comes, to what extent is the Holy Spirit involved in those sort of changes over time of our understanding of Revelation?
All right, so here's our homework. I that's a great topic. That would be so. Here's what I want to do, and I would suggest this as our homework. So you're right. This modern and postmodern impulse, these impulses. I think there's three instances in church where the church has tried to take up this encounter with modernity, maybe even postmodernity. And the three documents, I'm going off the top of my head, so I may get this a little bit wrong, but I think it's Pope Leo XIII. He writes Providentissimus Deus,
right,
which is about biblical interpretation. And then the next one, I think, is Divino Afflante Spiritu, which is Pope Pius XII. And then, so we're thinking, like, so these are going on in like 1880, 1890, then 1950. And then you have Dei Verbum coming out of the Second Vatican Council.
And then I would follow all that up with Fides et Ratio. I don't think you can look at this without looking at it through the lens.
Well, yeah, of all the postmodern, yeah. Right. Well, I think that one, and I also, yeah,
John Paul II.
Yeah, St. John Paul II. The other one I think that's two other things I'd say that are worth going back to or reading for the first time, if not, is Spes Salve by Pope Emeritus Benedict, because right. Saved in Hope, because he takes on a lot of these thinkers that we've been talking about in this series we've been doing on metaphysics. And I write at the first opening pages. He spends a lot of time. Maybe I don't remember how many pages, 5, 6, 10, something like that. It's a lot. And it's very fruitful. But then the other one I was going to say, and here the exact title escapes me because I want to say Dei Verbum again, but that's not it. But Benedict XVI, when he was Cardinal Ratzinger in charge of the CDF, he also put out a document, issued a document to try to correct errors in biblical interpretation. A couple of different times, but
yeah,
yeah. So those are all really great resources to see how Holy Mother Church is. You know.
I think Benedict XVI's thought and the way he approaches these things, I think, is a great example of what I would call positive postmodernism. I don't want to call him completely a postmodernist because obviously he does have metaphysical commitments that come from St. Thomas, etc. I mean, I would call him much more scholastic in his
maybe even Augustinian at times, right?
Augustinian at times, correct?
Yeah. Well, but so was Aquinas,
right?
So.
Right. But nonetheless, you look at Truth and Tolerance, which he wrote as Cardinal Ratzinger, and, you know, kind of the question of, okay, what does the church really mean when she says all are saved, right?
Right.
You know, I think, you know, Truth and Tolerance is looking at the question of there's no salvation outside the church. What does the church really mean when she says there's no salvation outside the church? And you know, in this book, he kind of shows how truth comes disseminated in lots of different ways. And that basically the Catholic Church is that which contains the whole truth, but that doesn't necessarily exclude other religions from containing parts of the truth.
Yeah, fragments of it. Yeah.
That's a very postmodern approach to that question and a very postmodern work. Doesn't make it any less solidly Catholic. It doesn't make it any less true. But the approach of looking at this through a linguistic lens and through the lens of language, also looking at Benedict XVI's Jesus of Nazareth
series.
Those are very postmodern.
Now's a great time to be reading those again, too.
No, it's great Advent meditation. But once again, I think those are sort of the positive side of how postmodernism can approach these types of things and questions by diving into one aspect of our inheritance, our intellectual inheritance, that you really can't talk about the faith without talking about it as a concept of an inherited, handed down body of knowledge, right?
Right.
And so...
Well, that's the Latin word, right? Tradere, right? Where we get tradition, the handing on.
Right, exactly. The handing on. You know, I think one of the big, I would almost say postmodern discussions that we have is over the liturgy. All the liturgy battles that are taking place between those that are staunch, they're going to adhere to the traditional Latin Mass and no other Mass. And then all of those that, I mean, there's a large chunk of people that go to the Novus Ordo that say, nope, this is the Mass. The traditional Latin Mass needs to go by the wayside because it is no longer the
that's
Mass.
That's Pope Francis' right? position.
Well, I don't know if that's quite his position or not.
Pretty close to it.
But
based on the last two documents he issued.
But this whole discussion is a discussion of what is the content of the faith as it's been handed down. And once again, mm-hmm. that's a discussion of the narrative. That's a discussion of not the objective reality of God, not even the objective reality of the church, but the church's self-understanding and how the church understands herself, which that's a very postmodern discussion. So the postmodernism is this sort of taboo subject for Catholics that Catholics don't and can't and won't engage in. I don't think it's true at all. I think to a certain extent we live in a postmodern world, and most of our intellectual disputes revolve around that postmodern milieu. We don't talk about things in terms of metaphysical concepts anymore. Even our discussions of metaphysics are discussions in terms of the linguistic inheritance that we've received over time.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that point of view. I don't know that I don't align quite with all that, but I do think for the Catholics, again, setting aside maybe that dominant feature that we've mentioned around linguistics, I do think that there are other features of postmodernism that can be problematic. Like we mentioned, you know, this sort of rejecting of grand narratives and things like that. The person I think of that offers a lot of scathing criticism of postmodernism is Jordan Peterson. Like if you listen to him, one thing he brings
but
up.
But he's a Jungian psychologist, right?
Right.
And so
right.
the understanding, I mean, you talk about understanding the world through archetypes,
right?
And start talking about right. it that way. That becomes very, very aligned with postmodernism very quickly too.
Well, I don't know about that. I would say they kind of tend to reject those, but I will say I've only tiptoed into it, but his lectures on, say, Genesis
I know,
are just
fantastic.
They're fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, and
he's,
they come
he's
from
onto
that,
something there.
They come
and he gets
that,
like 10 or 20 million views or
right.
something.
Right, they come from that Jungian psychological
yeah.
thing. Where you know,
he's
I
got
think,
one coming out on Exodus, yeah. which I want to check out.
Right, and you know, I think for them, the Jungians, they go back to sort of biological... our sort of lived biological experience and how that translates into how our brains work a little bit. I don't know.
I just find him very compelling to listen to.
Right.
So, and he takes great umbrage with, I think he sees postmodernism as quite his adversaries in a lot of, and very
some postmodernists. And I think that's mm-hmm. the problem is when you're talking about postmodernism, you're talking about a huge, diverse group of thinkers. So you're thinking about a wide variety of
do you think he locate? I think he does. Do you think he locates, that dialectic, that Marxist dialectic in there, in postmodern? I think he does.
Yeah, but
would
mean,
you?
Well, no, because I think Marxism ultimately, I don't know, it comes down to economics. I guess there's some postmodernists that would look at it and say economics is reality. And so they would look
I
at
I think
things
it's more through, like he's pointing, I think he's pointing at though more, not so much the economics. I think what Peterson was pointing at in postmodernism is the dialectic of oppressor and oppressed.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's that. But that's, once again, that's a very few postmodernist thinkers. Certainly not all postmodernists think along those lines. You know, I think one of the big questions for Catholics, though, is how does our understanding of the Eucharist over time change? You know, how has our understanding of the Eucharist developed? I think this idea of development of doctrine that we get from John Conrad Hunter Newman
yeah.
plays very much into postmodern thought. Once again, Newman's not a postmodernist, but I think his understanding of how doctrine is handed down over history and through history and through the church does play into a certain postmodern understanding of things. And so you do, I think, get a richer, possibly deeper understanding of the Eucharistic Eucharist, looking at it through that lens of how has this understanding evolved over time? How have we come to a deeper appreciation of the Eucharist? How has the Eucharistic worship over time within the church become something I think even more deeply rooted in human experience than it was in the past? And I think that's a great question for Catholics to understand. But of course, we're
and a great one to take up next time.
I know, exactly. We're out of time. Exactly. We're out of time. But this has been a good discussion. This has been a good series on metaphysics. So, but you'll have to tune in next week for more here on The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent@CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.